Off the Ball Breakfast.
But I thought you all liked, you like Amram. You thought Amram looked good too.
He did. He also looked very well.
I never liked his hair.
It's important to be caught.
He was doing too much with the news today.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The Final One Standing by William Hill on Off the Ball. Download the app and play today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
All right, you're very welcome along to this week's Final One Standing. It's a doozy of a weekend in terms of Premier League fixtures. We are live on Sunday from Arsenal against Manchester United. That's a 4:30 kickoff. And the other game that we're doing on Sunday live on the radio is Crystal Palace against Chelsea. Also on Sunday, it's Brentford and Forest and Newcastle United and Villa. They're the other 2:00 kickoffs, and it's a reasonable slate of games tomorrow as well. West Ham and Sunderland get your weekend off to a nice gentle one that you can largely ignore unless you're Ben. Burnley and Spurs at 3:00, Fulham and Brighton at 3:00. Man City take on Wolves, a resurgent Wolves, at 3:00 to see who they're going to sign in the summer. And then Bournemouth against Liverpool is a 5:30 kickoff, and are Liverpool back or not? Bournemouth, slight resurgent, slight green shoots in terms of their form just recently. Ben and David are with us in studio, and Lee Phelps is with us on the line. Lee, good morning to you. How are you?
Yeah, really good, thank you. Yeah, it's a cracking weekend, isn't it? And there's a lot of those games that you just listed that it's not that easy to predict. I mean, like, you know, everyone will be hating me for saying this, but we've had a good start to the year, because it's been a weird start. There's been some really strange results. And you look at Liverpool, how confident are you back at them? How confident are we back in Man City at 2-9 against Wolves? We should be, shouldn't we? We should be. But like,
you're not, though.
Well,
at the moment, you're just not back in City. I mean, they will win that game 2-0, right?
Yeah, they'll win the game, won't they? But at 2-9, it just makes, it's not like, yes, definitely put it on your acca without even contemplating it, isn't it? It's not that, because the performance against Manchester United, the performance against Bodo Glimt. I mean, would Wolves beat Bodo Glimt?
Well, I don't know. I think Bodo Glimt in the Arctic Circle have been tricky for everybody. Like, Juve had a late winner there. Spurs, who are obviously no good, also managed to draw there. So
yeah.
Spurs in Europe, though, aren't bad, right? They're like, for whatever reason, a slightly different team.
Yeah, Bodo Glimt.
Well, I think it's because of Europe. I think that's what it is. It's because of Europe, isn't it? Europe's obviously... Europe, I mean, the Premier League, whatever you say about it, I know people always say it's the best league in the world and all that. Well, it must be pretty good, because teams who are out of form in the Premier League just go places and win fairly comfortably, don't they? So,
You said it's been a good year for the bookmakers so far. Is that because the draw has made a comeback out of nowhere? There were no draws for a couple of seasons, and now suddenly we're getting loads of them.
Yeah, I mean, some of the results have been absolute. I mean, we're kind of like, obviously, you're looking at it through the prism of, you know, commercial results, obviously. But obviously this season for us, we're also looking at it through the prism of Final One Standing. And when you look at, like, some of the... Obviously, those first leagues, and especially the €500,000 one, they went so long, didn't they? We got to all the way to round 19 for that. And you couldn't get rid of players. There was players getting through every week. But then suddenly you look at some of the results over the past couple of weeks, like, you know, for the newer leagues... Yeah, draws galore. That week where Man City drew, there were only about 3 wins, I think, all weekend. Arsenal drew, of course. City drew. And suddenly you're like, yeah, so there's we're getting winners every week. We had, I mean, put yourself in this position, guys, right? So you, into the weekend, there were 4 players left in a €200,000 game. 2 went Spurs. 1 went Leeds, 1 went Brighton. So Spurs obviously don't win. Leeds win with that last minute or stoppage time winner against Fulham. And that, so that one person who's got Leeds watches Brighton Bournemouth on Monday night. The other person's picked Brighton, so they need Brighton to win to stay in. And the one who's picked Leeds needs Brighton to not win to take home €200,000. They've entered for free, and that's all theirs. And that's what happened, wasn't it? Brighton drew 1-1, and they pick up 200K. There was 3 other €20,000 leagues won last week. They were all, 2 of them were won by single players as well. The others were split. So I think it's over €1.25 million has been won now since the start of the season. Incredible.
Following your advice, I think I picked Sunderland last week to beat Palace, and... in the current league, there were 66,500 people in it. That's down to 8,900 after 1 week. So
unbelievable.
58,000 people out in 1 week.
Yeah, crazy. Because, again, you look at the results, you just can't... You know, I said to one of our traders last week, this must be like, you know... there comes a time when you don't... As a bookmaker, you don't want poor results, obviously, for everyone, because it's like it's no fun, is it? It's like there's no kind of joy in that for anyone, because when you're looking at like the likes of Newcastle, and it was poor football on the Sunday as well, wasn't it? You got like Wolves drawing at Newcastle, so Newcastle would have been a favourite. You know, Villa losing at home to Everton, Arsenal drawing at Forest, you know, Liverpool drawing with Burnley. There's some strange results. City obviously losing. So, yeah, so by the time you tot it all up, it was carnage in terms of the players going out. The great thing about Final One Standing, though, is that you can join again next week. So if you've never played before, or you got knocked out last week, or you won 200,000 and you want to have another go, there's a 20K game starting on Saturday, 3 p.m. deadline to get your picks in. Free to play as usual. Pick a Premier League team to win. If they win, you go through. If they don't, you're out.
There are no obvious winners this week. I mean, like as you said, Man City are 9-2 on against Wolves at home. But other than that, the games are largely like Spurs at Burnley. I don't think anybody's very confidently predicting Spurs are going to win. They're evens. And then Chelsea at Crystal Palace are evens. And after that, you're looking at Brentford are a touch of favourites at home against... against Forest at home.
Yeah. That's probably my nap of the weekend, that one. I think Brentford have been really, really good. I mean, they kind of go under the radar a little bit, don't they? But like when you look at the stats for Brentford at home, they've been brilliant. I mean, obviously, got Igor Thiago, who's having the best season of his career in the hardest division he's ever played in. At home, they've scored 3 against Sunderland, who obviously everyone lauds, 4 against Bournemouth, 3 against Burnley, 3 against Newcastle, 3 against Liverpool, and 3 against Manchester United. Now, I know not all those teams are fantastic, but they're still putting the goals away. You know, I thought the game against Chelsea, they had more possession, more shots, more shots on target, more big chances, more corners. This is at Stamford Bridge. Obviously, ended up losing 2-0, but on any other given day, they would have scored goals there. And that was the first loss since losing to Man City in the League Cup mid-December. So I think 10-11 is a really nice price. I think Forest are lucky that they've got the points they have on the board at the moment, I think, because I think they're starting to struggle a little bit.
Yeah, the new manager bounce seems to have disappeared from Sean Dyche.
I think as well the new manager bounce could be happening again fairly shortly, I think. Forest, 4 managers in the season is... I don't know what your thoughts are, Lee, but like on the next kind of sack race, is Sean Dyche up there? They put in a pretty tepid performance against Braga on Thursday night in Europa League, and they're just playing terribly awful football, and combine that with like really poor results, and the also the lack of patience, let's say, of Evangelos Marinakis, is Dyche and Forrest that kind of experiment going to fall by the wayside?
He's his third favourite is 9-2. So ahead of him in the betting, Oliver Glasner's 3-1, obviously, given where Palace are. And at any given point, he could kind of do another kind of semi-explosive press conference. And Thomas Frank's 11-10 favourite, even though they've had a good result in Europe in the week. Sometimes you get to this start of the season where no manager to leave is starting to kind of... maybe not quite now, maybe February, March. No manager to leave gets shorter and shorter. It's 50-1, no manager to leave. So at the moment, Nuno's 9-1. But Pep's the same price. Pep Guardiola's 9-1. Same price as Nuno to be the next manager to leave his job. Mad.
You think Nuno's staying?
I think Nuno stays, yeah. I think it's more a combination of the owners and the board there, and they recently... added to his backroom team, Paco Gemes, which only tells me they're going to back him. So, I like, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, I would have had Nuno as a firm favourite to go. But I think a combination of West Ham maybe just accepting there probably is no better manager who will come into that situation, and they've gone, you know what, we'll back him. There's nothing else we can do here.
And did last week's result give you any hope that they might be about to slash their way through the nether regions of the Premier League and escape?
It did for all about 5 minutes, and then I realised we were playing Thomas Frank Spurs once the full time whistle went. And like, it's not hype, I'll say that Spurs performance in the first half was up there with some of the worst West Ham performances I've seen this season. It was like shamefully bad, and it's the first time that I really kind of watched Thomas Frank on the sideline, and I thought he just doesn't look like a manager of like a so called big six club. He doesn't look like he fits that mould, and I hate using that big six phrase, but he really didn't look like someone who was fully comfortable in that role.
Is that, though, like, the results have been bad and so therefore he looks like he can't handle it. But if the results looked, if the results have been slightly better, you'd be like, oh, you know, the calm, gentle, professorial, it's Wenger-esque.
Yeah, maybe we would, but they're not. And like
results in Europe have been good, though.
Results in Europe have been good, but like Spurs showing us last season that Europe doesn't, at the end of the day.
But that was a different tournament, though.
It doesn't matter to the manager, but Spurs aren't going to win the Champions League.
No, but they're still in the top four. Like, I think, like, considering the players that Frank has been without this year, like Madison, Kulusevski, obviously Bergwijn's out now for a while. They've had, like, a lot of injuries.
Solanke up to this point.
Yeah, so, like,
they have had a very nice Europe run, though. They've had a very Europa League, Champions League run, is all I say.
The only game they've lost was that Paris Saint-Germain game in the Champions League. But, like, it's the elite European competition. They've still beaten, have to beat the teams that, you know, that were put in front of them. I think, like, the whole this whole narrative around Frank, and it's got so toxic and so nasty as well. It's just a really bad reflection on Tottenham Hotspur fans in general, because they see this guy from Brentford who, you know, who obviously Spurs see themselves as this big club, but like, are they a big club really? Like, they're just, you know, they've won two trophies in 25 years.
Well, the money and the stadium and their ability to generate revenue would suggest that they could be a big club if they decided to spend a bit more money.
Yeah, which is quite interesting this week, because they, I think they, did they overtake United in the Deloitte Money League as regards revenue? So that's really interesting. And also, it's a quite a worrying thing as well for the rest of the league that, you know, you have to increase your stadium and build a brand new kind of generic stadium to increase your revenue and make money. But Spurs, like, off the pitch, like, we don't really know who's running the club. So Frank has kind of this vacuum of, he's in this vacuum.
Well, he met
of,
them for lunch, so he knows.
Yeah, he meets them for lunch, he meets them for breakfast, but like, he knows, but like, I don't know where the support is coming from. Like, Vinay Venkatesham or whatever, like, is that, like, is he really going to be there? Like, Paratici's just left as well. I don't know. I kind of cut the slack on Frank, and I'd kind of look at some of the players he has and maybe some of the players to step up as well, because, you know, they haven't really been performing as what they should be as well.
So you're saying stick with him?
Absolutely stick with him, yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. You look at some of the vitriol that's coming out of Tottenham fans, and you've got to ask the question, who do you think you are? Like, what? I mean, look, when you look at the performances over recent years, obviously they had a really good spell and they obviously got to the Champions League final, and they are capable as a club of finishing top four. They are capable of doing that, and they have done that in recent years, haven't they? But generally, the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, last year was obviously a crazy year for them. But they're not a, they are not a top four club consistently, are they? They're not in there. So it's like, what? They are a sixth, seventh. They're a team who probably should be in the fight to qualify for the Conference League or Europa League. That's what they are. And, you know, so they're underperforming this season. But I think the expectation levels are way higher than they should be. But I tend to agree with you guys. I think it's, it's unfair, the injuries they've got, and everyone has injuries, I get that. But, you know, I think if they can start to get players back, we probably will see an upturn in performance and levels. But again, I think the European thing just hide it a little bit, because I just think that the Premier League must be a step or two above a lot of these leagues. And so when they go and play them, it looks relatively straightforward and they look good.
They have the sixth biggest wage bill in the Premier League. So generally, that's a reflection of where you should finish in the league. So sixth, I think, for Spurs is fine. They're currently 14th. But like, there's not
this
much.
This is the issue.
Yeah, but there's not much in the difference. Like, there's not, you know, there's
a couple of wins.
A couple of wins.
Where are those wins going to come? ideally, you'd be beating Burnley away from home. But Burnley looked like they had a little bit about them. All the relegation threatened teams looked like they had a bit about them last week. Lee, you did have a great shout last week when you mentioned that the Sunderland price against Palace was out of whack with reality. Anything standing out for you this week?
Yeah, I do like that Brentford one. I mean, look, it's not that they are a touch of odds on, so I'm not saying it's a great price. -1 on the handicap for Brentford, given those goals that I mentioned, is 13-5. So I don't mind that at all. I can see Brentford scoring a couple against Forest, maybe even three, and do Forest score at all? I think they're really struggling. But a lot of the others, you're right. It's hard to pick. I mean, if you can trust the likes of, you know, Chelsea, those even money shots that you said, Chelsea, Liverpool, at Bournemouth, who are 17-20, reasonable price if they turn up. Tottenham at Burnley should win that game, shouldn't they? But it's not guaranteed. Then there's some nice ones there. One player who I thought was good in midweek set two goals at Wilson Odobare for Tottenham. He's 11-2 to assist this weekend, which seemed way bigger than it should be, given that he's obviously capable if he starts, and if obviously Solanke starts as well. He's 7-4 to score. So some of the prices around Tottenham players, even if you don't take the win, look a little bit overinflated if, and I know this is a big if they turn up. And remember, despite the fact the form hasn't been great, they're still the second best away team in the Premier League this season. That says, I don't know what that says about the rest of the Premier League away records, but that's what they are. Tottenham are just behind Arsenal in terms of away records. So, yeah, there's a few there. The usual ACCA boosts on Saturday and Sunday. So, four picks to activate that, and epic boosts across the big games all weekend as well. So, should be a good one. And now, obviously, the Arsenal Man United game is a fascinating one. Seeing as Man United are back, obviously everyone's saying yeah. Man United are back. Of course, it's crazy how we all overreact. But it made me look back at that first game of the season at Old Trafford when Arsenal won 1-0, and I just wanted to remind myself about that game. And the possession was 61% in Man United's favour. They had 22 shots on goal to Arsenal's 9, 7 on target to Arsenal's 3. Arsenal won 1-0, of course. I just wonder if, you know, Carrick and his coaching team have had a full week with them. Can they get a result? Man United, as it stands right now, are 24-5. So that's a smidgen under 5-1. I know it's going to Arsenal, so don't get me wrong. I'm not saying Man United go and win, but that feels a bit big at the moment.
Especially the way they're going to play. Like, they won't be trying to keep possession 61% of the time. They're more than happy to hit you on the break, and he's picking players who are now in a position capable of doing that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is Arsenal, and I think we're probably still underrating Arsenal a little. I think as a neutral, I want the title race to last as long as possible, so it'd be great to see Arsenal slip up a little bit. But they're a fantastic team, aren't they? And, you know, if they win this game, then it's almost turned into a one-horse race, and you're looking at the William Hill Scottish Premiership to look for something a bit more competitive, where Hearts and Celtic and Rangers are all going for it. But yeah, so that kind of, I guess, is a bit of me that wants to keep the title race open. But I do think, given what we saw from Manchester United last week, if they've got the same kind of endeavour, the same commitment, I was just really surprised at how different they were. I know you guys have probably talked about this a lot, but there was one moment in the game when they scored the third, well, was it the fifth goal that got disallowed? When they scored the third, which got disallowed for offside, Casemiro jumped on Michael Carrick's back. And I don't know what that means. It was like, he wouldn't have jumped on Amorim's back, and he wouldn't have jumped on many managers' back, I'm sure. But it just showed there's some sort of togetherness there, and they've gone in there and, you know, they've done something to that team. Casemiro's obviously leaving at the end of the season now, but like, maybe that's why, because he jumped on his back. He said, you can get on. But yeah, there's something maybe just changed in Manchester United. Let's see what happens.
Lee, anything else for you?
Nah, it's all good. I'm looking forward to the great weekend.
Good stuff. Enjoy. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Thank you, guys.
Let's get into that a little bit. Casemiro obviously was very good. Mm. At various stages, there was like a ball in someone's foot and he slides in, nicks it away, and you're like, well, that's what they paid all that money for. And maybe now he rides off into the sunset and everybody's happy.
Yeah, I'm actually disappointed about Casemiro leaving at Manchester United. I actually literally just said this last week to my dad. I was like, Casemiro, I'd like him to stay at the club, and even if he doesn't stay in a playing capacity, to stay in a coaching capacity, because I think he has such an influence. Like, he's been one of the best holding midfielders in Europe for the last, let's say, 10 years. He's won about 4 or 5 Champions Leagues. And I was listening to Dion on the football show last night, or on the newsroom last night with Owen and Cameron, and he said, you know, he wasn't that bad as his legacy at Man United. I actually think he has got a pretty solid legacy at United. He played in a team, and his most difficult moment as a Manchester United player was when he was playing in holding midfield beside Christian Eriksen, who also couldn't run. And he was expected, so United basically had a front four pressing and then a back four that kind of stayed 20 yards outside their own box. So he was expected to cover like 60 yards of room. And even Casemiro at his peak was never able to do that. So yeah, as regards like his United career, like looking back at his legacy, it's actually been pretty good, pretty solid. And I think the negativity, if you actually watch the Man United games quite closely, Casemiro is very, very key to what, you know, how United play. And I think in a more structured team under maybe Ten Hag, he would have been even better. But unfortunately, he was at, you know, at United at probably the wrong time. You know, at the wrong time for the club and maybe the wrong time for him too. But I think him alongside like a proper midfielder and Kobbie Mainoo, we've seen that last week, it kind of gets the best out of both players.
Do you not think there was a worry though if you give him a new contract? Like, if you give him a 2-year contract, his legs could go in 6 years.
Yeah, but his legs are probably gone anyway. But I think you could give him a lot less money maybe, but you know, maybe he goes to Saudi, he gets a big payday and maybe he comes back. I don't know. Like, as a Manchester United fan, I would always like kind of look back in Casemiro's career as like, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't his fault, it was Manchester United's fault. And that's the case with a lot of players that have signed for Man United over the last 10 years or so.
What's going to happen in this game? Are you buying that Man United have any chance?
I didn't completely write them off last week against Manchester City, and I would do the same again going into this game. I think Arsenal have shown in those couple of nil-alls that maybe they lack that kind of refresh to go and get it up top. And we just talked about that first game of the season, and I remember watching Gyökeres in that game and thinking, this guy is not up to it. And it hasn't really lived up to, he hasn't really lived up to any sort of hype, I think, throughout the season.
The last week, he's been good. He's starting to be like, I think they're starting to work out what they have with him. There's less pressure on him now because Jesus is coming. And I think also there's a bit of a kick up the ass. You're actually in a competition for starting in the big games. I don't think he is yet. But if Jesus continues to score every time he plays, that might be the case.
So what do you think is going to happen with Gyökeres? What do you think his reasonable aim is now?
I think next season, there's no excuse for him not to have, in all competitions, 24 to 27 goals.
So what did you think should have been his expectations for this season, considering they spent that money on him?
I don't know. I think that like loads of players arrive and are totally overwhelmed by what's going on. He there's loads of reasons why he shouldn't have been, you know. Speaks the language, knows the culture really well. I don't know if the team knew exactly how to get the best out of him. I think we're starting to see that. I think he's got a bit of confidence. For the rest of the season, he should be decent. I don't think he's amazing.
No.
I think everybody overpaid on their strikers in the last 12 months, the way everybody overpaid on their central midfielders 2 years ago. Yeah. But that just...
Yeah, there is a serious like shortage of like top quality strikers on the market.
And it's, say they got him for 40 million, would you be thinking, that's not bad?
Yeah, definitely.
So,
yeah. But they haven't... This is the thing though, they have overpaid that money.
Yeah,
but and when you overpay by that much, I would want a little bit more back from him.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about goals, I'm talking about general play as well. I know it's changed a little bit recently, but when I watched Šeško, Manchester United, again,
well, hasn't fully
worked out for Manchester United, but I think that his profile would suit Arsenal's attack more than Gyökeres does at the moment.
Yeah, I think just Gyökeres as well is that like the wrong age profile as well. He's 27, he's 28 in June. Like at least Šeško's 21 or 2, isn't he? So like... Yeah,
wrong age profile for what though?
As in for long term investment, long term success.
But like, I would say Arsenal are in win now.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
the Ollie Watkins transfer would have made a lot of sense as well.
You never said Gyökeres, like Gyökeres' impact this season has not been like title winning. Like he's been the difference. Like well, Van Persie was, and he went from Arsenal to Manchester United. Now he's absolutely nowhere near that level as well. I think Gyökeres, you know, I think obviously he'll last a season at Arsenal. Let's see what happens in the summer. I see Gyökeres' future in Serie A. I see it in the Turkish Super League. I don't think he's that good. He hasn't even done a whole pile for his national team as well. He was at Brighton and Coventry, you know, milling around, kind of not doing a whole pile. Went to Sporting and like bagged in a heap of goals and like looked like this world beater. But English clubs have been stung by the old Liga NOS, Portuguese league in the past, and I think this is just another example of it.
When you listen to players who were there at Brighton, a lot of them can't believe he's gone on to this level. I heard Lewis Dunk, a couple of others talking about it. They couldn't believe he's reached this peak, and they didn't see it. Yeah. And it's not often you hear late bloomers. People will often say, oh, you could see he had something in him. They flat out didn't think he would make this level.
Well, Seanan Maguire was on Off the Ball Breakfast, I'd say a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, and he was like, this guy is incredible, like hits the ball right foot, left foot, like he's an unbelievable player. But just the level of trying to translate that from the Portuguese league into the Premier League, especially the top club or one of the top clubs in the Premier League.
You think they'll get rid of him in the summer? They'll look to replace him?
I could see him going on loan to Inter with an option to buy, or an on loan to Juventus with an option to buy. I just think
they will, I think, probably have the excuse of getting rid of Jesus in the summer to get another number nine in who can put all the cash in, because obviously they're a very well run club with loads of money.
Yeah, I just don't know where the sort of striker comes from. See, the thing is as well, like Arsenal have had to adapt their entire game from like the centre forward style of Kai Havertz to the centre forward style of Victor Gyökeres, and that's a big, like Kai Havertz is just real technical footballer. Okay, he doesn't score a whole pile of goals, but he really knits the team together up front nicely. The big question mark I would have is like, but Kai Osaka hasn't scored, I think, in the last couple of games as well. I think he's gone off the boil a little bit. Like, he absolutely destroyed Kerkez a couple of times against Liverpool in the first half and then did nothing after that. I think as well, it's time for some of the other Arsenal players as well to step up. We saw that during the week against Inter, but the game against Inter is totally different to any game in the Premier League.
He won't pick Eze in the big games at the moment.
No, he won't trust him track back. And I love how we're nitpicking all these Arsenals, yet they're top of the league, and I don't think any of us think that they won't win the league, and they could well do the Dublin win the Champions League, yet they're still not perfect, which is kind of what shows maybe the potential of this team if they did get a number nine.
I don't know.
That suits the system.
I don't really know the potential of this team. Like, I think they're going to win this league because a lot of the teams in the league are not that good. Like City are brittle. Liverpool have fallen off. Newcastle are nowhere near it. Spurs are nowhere near it. Manchester United are clearly nowhere near it. Like, you know, this is a bit like Kilkenny winning the handy hurling All-Irelands. This is like a handy Premier League title for Arsenal, and you know, they're just at the right time winning the Premier League for the first time in 20 odd years. I don't see them going on a legacy run. This isn't the same Arsenal kind of team from what we see in the late 90s, early 2000s. Nowhere near it.
I think maybe that theory undervalues the importance of actually doing something for the first time and the release that the group gets from the pressure. The pressure at Arsenal for the last number of years, like last year they were fighting with themselves and fighting with referees the whole year round. This year they've calmed that down and they've enhanced the squad, you would have to say, where the depth they have, I would say, in all areas of the pitch at the moment is somewhat unparalleled in the Premier League. Now maybe that's because most of their players, with the exception of Havertz, are fit. And the centre-backs are kind of coming back into it, but they did buy well there as well. I suspect that actually if they do get the success dividend by winning the league this year, they'll be a force for 3 or 4 seasons, in the same way that Liverpool were forced 3 or 4 seasons.
Yeah.
You're not having it.
I still don't buy it. Like, I just think like if someone put them under real pressure, especially in this tight run, and if City got their act together and started beating teams more comfortably, I really would, you know, I would have really serious concerns for Arsenal where they can hold on and kind of win those big games.
Let me ask, if they win the league this year, does that make them more or less likely or have no impact on their ability to win the Champions League over the next couple of seasons after that?
I think Arsenal will always be in contention to win the Champions League the way they are now, because they're very good at singling out games and building, and Arteta is really good at picking teams the right games. He's a very good, like, I guess, cup team. They haven't maybe won too many cups, but you've seen that game, the two games against Real Madrid last year, where they were fantastic. They absolutely destroyed Real Madrid in those two games. I think they're always going to be in contention to win the Champions League, but I just don't think they're going to have the longevity in the squad that they're going to be competing year on, year out. I don't know how long Arteta as well is going to remain in his job too. Like, I don't know if he's going to be there. Like, is he the type of manager that's going to be there for 10, 15 years?
He'd
be there
for 8.
I think if he wins a league, that pressure valve is released and then the shackles are really off them.
Because where's he going to go? Are City going to come and say, you're our new Pep because you are, you know,
kind of old Pep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would he go there though?
I don't know.
Would he not rather continue to build what he's been building at Arsenal? And especially if he wins a league, which he looks likely to do.
Like so he's not going to go to Man City, I suppose.
No.
Like
Barcelona.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But like total basket case of like squandered the incredible revenue that they have to the point where they need to pull all these weird financial levers so that they can register players for the Champions League. And it's like, what is going on here?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, there's probably nowhere else to go other than where he is right now. Mm. But like, I don't know. I just find like, I think you get very toxic at Arsenal very quickly. You could even see that in the Liverpool game. It got a bit like the fans got a bit kind of on edge, and that's why I think as well about this game on Sunday as well. I think Arsenal are going to be fine with 0-0 or 1-1, 20 minutes to go. Like, that's like, they are a conservative team, and that's why they're not one of the best Premier League teams of all time, as in, like, you know, maybe if they win the Premier League, they're not conservative.
I don't think anybody's saying this.
No,
no.
No.
The points tally won't be, and
Like, I would just love if there was someone there to challenge them, and there's not really been anyone there to challenge.
But that's the issue, is Arsenal know that Man City won't win those games, won't win all those games against those teams between, say, 11th and 5th. They know they will drop a point. So Arsenal, I've caught from a couple of times going into these big games to really go for it and stamp your authority. And I think I've come to the realisation now that they know they don't need to, because they know a point will do, because whoever they're playing are going to drop points in the next three games, and Arsenal will probably go and win the next three games. They know they don't have to stamp the authority, because they can do it in the games that they're not playing them in.
The one thing you'd say is that this game against Man United shouldn't be, you know, if you're looking at the profile of Man United's results over the course of the season, this shouldn't be one of those games where you hear like, oh, we're going to batten down the hatches and we're happy with an all draw. You'd just be like, oh, this is Common or Garden, mid-table team coming to our patch. It'll be dark on a Sunday afternoon. Let's go and batter them. I guess they're still scared of the Manchester United brand.
Yeah. And that, and I think that will carry into this game a little bit as well. Yeah, and it's the same when Arsenal play any big team. There
a
is
low
that
scoring draw.
Low scoring draw, 1-1. I don't know. Like, the thing of United, like with the result last week against Man City, like Michael Carrick was, you know, in comparison to Ruben Amorim, Darren Fletcher, he's greatly helped by having like Harry Maguire back, and you know, like actually having players playing in their correct positions, like Dalot right back and Shaw at left back. You know, he played Dorgu on the wing, who's actually picked up a bit of form, which is kind of strange because he was literally a player signed for Ruben Amorim, and since Amorim is kind of gone, and maybe even before Amorim was leaving, he'd kind of picked up his form. But like, this is,
I think, like Dorgu's really young and has like a lot of gifts, you know, in a good coaching environment could be brilliant.
Yeah, like we thought that coaching environment was going to be the Ruben Amorim kind of school, but yeah, he's kind of used his explosivity like more effectively in the last, let's say, 10-12 games than what he was doing beforehand. He was, I think Amorim had spoken about him in a press conference saying that every time he got the ball he was kind of panicking and he didn't trust his first touch. And I think now in the last couple of weeks he's just been like,
hey, you're really shit at football, why don't you get good at it?
Yeah.
What, get some confidence there, pal.
Yeah, like, and then he's just, I don't know, he's all of a sudden kind of have maybe the shackles been released off him, and especially with Amorim not being there, and it's been like a, seems like a bit of a toxic environment that, from what we've read since that that Amorim has left, that, you know, Dorgu is going to be able to hopefully, from a United perspective, kind of, yeah, fulfil his potential they signed when they paid 30 million to Lecce for him. So as regards this game on Sunday, like, I think Carrick has to pick like the proper big game players. So Cunha probably has to play, obviously Bruno Fernandes, Lisandro Martinez, like the proper leaders in the team. Casemiro, you know, will definitely have to play, and Kobbie Mainoo as well, who is obviously looking for this new big paid contract, and this might inspire like really good form in Kobbie Mainoo. Obviously that was his first Premier League start last week as well.
Well, a dangling carrot of a contract always does inspire that form, like as we've seen with Harry Wilson.
What will his contract be?
He's on like 20 grand now, 20 to 30 now, so I guess he's looking for 100 plus, 150, and he'll probably get it. Because Casemiro, what, his wages are like 350,000, so that's off the books now in the summer, so he's expecting maybe even more. And I think from the United fans' perspective, at least, is that he should be given the keys to the team. Like, we've seen his ability, like his...
A bit early.
Nah, he's played in a European Championship final at 18 or 19, or whatever he was.
And then his next manager dropped him.
Yeah, that says more about Amorim, though. That's like he felt he didn't have the physicality to play in this midfield system, but he had played kind of Bruno Fernandes there as a central midfielder. It just was weird and strange and wedded to this system that never really worked. Like, you know, Man United are a bit like Real Madrid. They can't really kind of go away from the values that kind of are the foundation of the club, and Amorim never got that, and the people who employed Amorim don't understand that either.
But they get some value for the money they're paying, though. Why are these two things mutually exclusive?
I think they'll absolutely get value for what they're paying. Like, there's a lack of central midfielders out there to sign. Like, if the United obviously have to go out and sign central midfielders anyway, but like, why would you let one who's as good as this and has like, should have his best years ahead of him out the door for free? Also, United have made a mistake before of letting like players like Danny Welbeck go, like local born Manchester lads.
Yeah, but shouldn't you be able to get them? Shouldn't he be an 80 grand a week player at this stage, Kobbie Mainoo, as opposed to, you know, twice that?
I just think he's he needs to be paid and he's going to demand them.
He's probably going to demand it though, isn't he?
Yeah,
yeah, that's the thing. He can say, look, this is my value now, but who's to say I'm not going to increase over the next 4 years?
As soon as
your
performance merits that, we'll trigger this. If you play X number of minutes for us in games that we deem category A games, Champions League, if we qualify, or games against teams in the top six or eight, realize, and you become first choice, we'll pay you more.
What does he have like to use his leverage over them? What are the club is
Chelsea have been long time admirers of Kobbie Mainoo.
Contract needs to run out at some point. So midfielders on 150 grand according to Capology at the moment. Bruno Guimarães is 160. Šeško's on 160, which seems like remarkable considering everybody else on 300 at Man United. Tonali, 150. Gabriel at Arsenal, 150. You know, defender. Mark Cucurella is 175 a week.
Yeah, this is tells you all about Chelsea.
So Chelsea,
James Madison, 170.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, like 150 is the new 5 grand a week.
Yeah.
Luke Shaw's on 150. Mason Mount's on 150. Does he go straight to their level?
I'd say, he does. He's probably looking at Mason. Yeah. Mason Mount's constantly injured. Yeah. So I should be on a similar sort of... Yeah, similar sort of money than as him. But Kobbie Mainoo, like when United have really lacking midfield players, like you can't let him out the door. Like no way can you do that.
Calvin Phillips is on 120. Good value there.
All right. So there you go.
For Calvin Phillips agent. Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to talk about this week?
No, I'll keep West Ham out my mouth. I downplayed them last week and it might have worked out. Sunderland, does it time play Sunderland? It is now.
Are the players back from African Cup of Nations?
Yep, they're only just back.
Can I suppose just before we move on, can we just Manchester City? I have a really sneaky feeling that Wolves are going to get a result against them tomorrow, 3 o'clock. It's City have been just so bad. Wolves have been on a bit of an upturn. They're going to counter attack them really, really well, I think, as well. Matthias Mané has been absolutely brilliant. I just fancy Wolves to get another draw maybe in that game at the Etihad tomorrow.
I just picked them in my final one standing, City. Are you telling me I should change?
I wouldn't be picking them.
I wouldn't be picking City at this current round.
No.
Yeah.
Final one standing is really hard. Who are you picking?
This week, I would pick...
I don't mind the Brentford show.
Yeah, Brentford is...
I don't mind Chelsea playing Crystal Palace, who the captain's just left, the manager's announced he's leaving at the end of the season, and their top scorer, star striker, has just announced that he wants to leave as well.
Yeah.
Who are also...
Chelsea
you know,
are so weird at the minute.
Yeah, but Palace haven't won since the 7th of December.
Yeah.
That's a long out time for a club that are playing on three fronts.
Yeah, the last one, it's the last win the Shelburne game. Something like that, no?
It could be, yeah.
Yeah.
In December.
Yeah, I don't know, like, this game is really interesting and I think, like, we've Phil Egan and Brian Kerr on comms on Sunday, but... I'd be really kind of intrigued to see or to hear what Brian's going to say about Liam Rossignol. I think this Chelsea Rossignol thing is going to get really toxic really quickly. They were pretty abject during the week. They beat a poor Cypriot team in Paphos 1-0. I don't know. I have a sneaky feeling that Palace might turn around on Sunday and just Glasner will be like, here's one for the board. Here's one for all my naysayers and doubters, and he'll get it right up them and Palace might actually get a result on them against them.
That'll be enough to get him the Man United gig. Stephen is at the Emirates on Sunday with Gary Breen on co-coms. It's Arsenal versus Manchester United live on Off the Ball. 4:30 kickoff for that game. And then the 2 o'clock kickoff, as we said, Phil Egan and Brian Kerr calling Crystal Palace home match with Chelsea. That's this week's episode of Final One Standing. We'll see you next week. Cheers, folks.
The Final One Standing by William Hill on Off the Ball. Download the app and play today. 18 plus gamblingcare.ie.